Hope in this freezing Christmas morning, we're going to have a little discussion on the peaks and valleys of singleness. For those of you who can't see the board, I had some subtitles, Peaks and Pits and Swinging or Singing the Blues, as the case may be within the categories we were dealing with. Also, for references, just to demonstrate that I have prepared something besides my personal view, which what you'll really get is my biased personal view anyway. But the book that I've been using a little bit lately is It's Okay to Be Single by Gary Collins. Also, I use Saturday Night, Sunday Morning, and it disappeared Saturday night. So I don't seem to have it for today. But I think it, too, is good for trying to go through the whole process of whether one wants to stay in sort of a singles world or to merge into a couples world, and both in the secular and the sacred sense. And I don't think there's any right or wrong. You know, I was listening to Gertrude's tape not too long ago, and they were talking about grieving, and am I grieving right? And I think maybe I have sort of a feeling that you'll gather that there is a right way to be single, but that in fact one does it according to one's own background and happenings and that sort of thing. Another piece of information that I've used is from the Lutheran on Don't Single Out the Singles, a tape called Solitude, and then dealing with some of the discussions we've had this summer. I had one on pairs and spares dealing with the church last week. And so I'm really not interested in repeating sort of what we dealt with in relation to the church. And that's why it wasn't as significant to me whether anybody beyond those of us who are a part of a single environment of some kind was in it. And in my definition of single, I use all forms of single that are not the legal form of marriage. That is where males and females are living together, where male-male or female-female is living together, divorced, widowed, all of those are classifications. I sort of have in my head a classification of singles, married, and those in transition. And that a whole lot of people really are in the process of transition from either a marriage, a death, a relationship, and move back and forth. 10% of our population never has moved back and forth. They have been single, and single in the legal sense. 3% of our total population are living as outside of the marriage bond, but within an intimate sexual relationship, or at least two living as a pair in some form, according to the latest statistics. 20% of the entire adult population is, in fact, living singly, according to the income tax returns of 82. Now, that may mean anything, but what it gives you an idea is that there's about 38% of us that are single in some form within the society. Or for every couple, there is a single in our society. And I think our society, and probably us too, haven't really dealt with that in our own evaluation or looking at the process of singleness. From the discussions of last week in relation to singleness, I'll talk about that for a few minutes. We also had a discussion on sexuality one evening, and I think that discussion, which was primarily staff, there that you may have some contributions to make in relation to that discussion, because I think the whole sexuality is also interrelated with the single lifestyle, and that within that is a definition that one finally makes for themselves on what is the best way in relation to both the single life or eventually into the married life. As I was thinking about this, I bumped into a statement by John Yoder, who was here a few years ago. And I think he has an interesting view of singleness, and so I'd like to quote him directly. It needs to be taught, that is singleness. It needs to be taught as normative Christian truth that singleness is the first normal state for every Christian. Marriage is not wrong, and existing marriages are to be nurtured. Yet there exists no Christian imperative to become married as soon as one can, or to prefer marriage over singleness as a more whole or wholesome situation. Now, why would such a thing come as a surprise to me? What'd you think? Is that what you expect to hear? What is the kind of thing that you generally hear about that state of singleness?
Just the opposite.
Just about the opposite. And so when I came across it, I also began looking into looking at the life of Jesus, how he dealt with the discussion of marriage or singleness. And it seems to me that all the discussion, with rare exception within the Bible, talks about love relationships as opposed to marriage relationships, with a few exceptions that give us some difficulty as non-fundamentalists. But that most of the time, and the samples and examples that we have from any kind of biblical, is in the importance of what I call a soul friend as opposed to a marriage. Soul friends and marriage ought to go together, but that marriage doesn't have to go with soul friends. And that consequently, within the concept of how one ought to live in the friendship of the Lord and the friendship of a community or of a society, that one of the areas that one always has to look to is the area of intimacy. And how does one deal with that within the single tradition? And I think from that, that I'd like to tell you a little bit about my own experience as a single, because it may set the stage for some kinds of understandings of dealing with singles. I think I grew up in the same way as every other little girl in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And consequently, if you had to have a fill-in-the-blank, my goal was supposed to be to get married. And probably in the blue-collar life that I was surrounded with, except for my church, which was in another part of the town, I better do it fast. And until then, I can go to the mill and flip tin, or I can be a secretary. And so for the female, at least, that was her calling. For the male, he had a few more choices. If he was an athlete, he might go to college from our school. If he was not, he might be my foreman. But and he too, however, would have perhaps 2 years of freedom, and then he too must start looking about. And so our orientation for me and for all males and females within the society was that if you were going to fulfill yourself, you'd have to be married. And so my head went in that vein, not very seriously, for many years, but by the time I got to be between 21 and 25, and I was away a lot, and when I returned home, not so much at all from my immediate family. Fortunately, I had an older sister, who may be around here someplace, who also was single, and when 66% of the family is single, within the children, you have a little more freedom. And after all, I'm just waiting around for the older one to get married. I have a little more freedom for this. And it's only polite to do that. And so I had some freedom there. But my head was pretty much in the same place as everybody else. That I might do this and I might do that and I will do the other thing. And then, obviously, it is time to marry. And so that was pretty much in my head, that it was a requirement some way, particularly of Christianity, if not of single life. But as I continued in that sort of vein and did the appropriate dating and did the appropriate kinds of oohing and aahing, I also wanted to be educated and wanted to be a physical educator, which was another sort of problem within at least the female community. But surely after college then I could settle down. And so a long story short, it really wasn't until I came to Holden that I began, which is near 35, to look at myself and realize one day that I really didn't want to get married, that my life was really pretty good, and that marriage would be an inhibitor to my life, particularly at that time, my professional life, that the things that I could do professionally, I could do better singly, that the kind of marriage that all of my friends were in really was a marriage of inequality. In some place I had picked up that I really was a pretty good person, and my brain seemed to work as well as some of the men. My physical skills were average for a male and good for a female. And so as I looked at myself, I began to have an appreciation of myself that I really hadn't had before. And it was only at the moment of an appreciation of my own essential being that I could suddenly look at my culture and say, you can't inculcate marriage into my being. And I think that was the most exciting happening for me, when I realized I had the freedom to not be married as well as the freedom to be married. And it changed my entire attitude, which changed my behavior, which freed me from a long line of tippy-toeing and game playing in that I wanted to be married. Now, I didn't announce this to the world, but in my head I announced it to myself, and my tapes changed in my head. And there's only 10% that really probably have these tapes, but I think it may be of interest to you in developing your own tapes. Because what it did was, I no longer lived for the future, but I lived for today. I wasn't preparing myself for anything, but in fact, I was organizing and living for what it is I'm going to do today. I may have academically done that, but that I really wasn't moving in a world of putting my life on hold. And I think the title that they were using today on holistic and whether you're dead or alive, I think the zombie-like way that particularly females tend to move in our society throughout the whole period of singleness takes away from all of the possibilities that they have. And for the male, I think the male begins not as early, but by 30, certainly. The male begins to shuffle in a chair as they're saying, you know, why are you getting along so well professionally, doing this and doing that, and yet you're not married yet. And for the male, it comes later, but it comes more severe on the society's view of what happens. And I think that same tape that ran in my head then, for divorced people particularly, have an even worse tape that is taped from childhood, and particularly in the Christian society. And that we therefore, as singles, all end up in the same boat of we're not quite whole people. And I think if there's anything that needs to be looked at, it's how do we gain the concept of a whole person? And I think this is terribly significant, not just for singles, but for marriages to work. The marriages that I find working are those in which someplace along the line, they don't have to be married in order to complete their beings. That they are more complete beings, and consequently, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. But that otherwise, there are some difficulties. Eric Fromm, in his writing, I think, has an interesting statement before we begin talking. If I am attached to another person because I cannot stand on my own feet, he or she may be a lifesaver, but the relationship is not one of love. Paradoxically, the ability to be alone is the condition for the ability to love. Anyone who tries to be alone with himself discovers how difficult it is, but that out of this comes the ability then to love another. And I think that that sort of sets the stage for some of the things we might discuss as we look at the norms and the peaks and the pitfalls. And as we start, I think the whole area of soul friendship or intimacy versus intimacy, commitment, and friendship as in a couple, whatever that couple may be, has a different approach to how it is that we will handle it, but that it is something, because of our sexuality, that has to be handled quite early as you begin dealing with your singleness. And so maybe as a starter, we might start talking about the importance of people in a single life, or else either the peaks or the pitfalls, sort of whatever seems to come to mind as I was talking is fine for a beginning.
What I found from my experiences after the divorce was it took a little courage, maybe some foolhardiness, but to find, let me put it the other way, it was easier to talk to other women about some of the things that are bothering me than some of my friends, male men friends, for whatever reason, more sympathetic, more open, whatever it was. And suddenly, then of course, after I was, you know, separated and everything else, when people said, oh, all you really want is, you know, get out there and swing us, you know, now that you're, you know, separated and everything else, and it took a little while to sort of to come to terms with that. But what I found was that there really are such things as honest-to-goodness, genuine, open friendships without a sexual dimension to them between men and women. And that was one of the most rewarding and helpful things for me at that time in my life. And not professional counselors, I mean, but just people you could talk to and relate to. And that was very, very helpful. And because I had always thought before that when a woman, I don't know if I mentioned this when we were doing this before, but when a woman was friendly towards me, I always interpreted this as a con. And it took a long time to get over that. And that was... because that's what a man one would, you know, would like to think. Be so irresistible, God, they just can't wait. They're lined up, you know, waiting for him. And here I am, girls, you know. And it took a long time to, you know, well, not a long time, but it took time to get over that. And that's been one of the best and most rewarding parts of my life is, you know, being in, you know, single again now. So I can have honest, genuine friendships. And that just dimension, once that's clear, that isn't a part of it, it just leads to all sorts of good things.
I want to react to his... I think that I have found, both by my gray hair and by the sudden awakening that I really didn't want marriage, that my relationship to men changed far more than my relationship to women. Mm-hmm. That suddenly, I don't know what there was in my manner, which was no longer threatening as both to the wife and to the husband. But there was something in perhaps my lack of stress or anxiety or even in the dating process, which became less and less with males as I was no longer interested, I realized, in marriage. And therefore, I was far more interested in friendship and primarily in non-sexual relationships. And it was far more difficult to establish with the men. That particularly the single man, I found it sort of the flip side of the coin, that obviously I was a swinger. And eventually, as you work through that, I think one of the biggest peaks that I have in my life, it would be the friendships, both the male and the female friendships. You could pretty well label me a feminist, and a really strong feminist. Consequently, my female relationships and friendships are far deeper as we have been struggling, lobbying, and dealing with the issues that are female. But the male ones that I already had and that have become stronger are far stronger too. And I find myself a counselor. Yeah. Here's a single counselor for men. But a lot of it has to do, again, with that person-to-person. That some way or other the sexuality can be removed and a form of intimacy forms. The important thing I think that is the biggest pit as I see it is a lack of exclusiveness that I do not experience within my love relationships, because I see myself as not having the right to those kinds of exclusivenesses that I want to share with a lot of people. And so I want a lot of people to be willing to share. And I think that's one of the things as you form your relationships that you have to deal with. Those of you that have lived both singly and married or in a love relationship that was sexual, that you find a different relationship as a single, that you're a different single, really, than you are as a paired single. In your relationships, but not your heads, that your heads may be the same. Anybody have, I may not be saying this very well, maybe somebody else can have any comments on what I'm saying in the relationships area?
Well,
or the exclusiveness? Any concerns sort of in that area of what it means or the value or the disadvantage of such a relationship like that that has been sort
of set up? There's something that I wanted to say, I don't know if this has to do with what you're saying now, but the biggest problem seems to me, and I'm going to be 21, so I'm really young to be thinking about this, but I would think it would be hard to get over the feeling that being single is just sort of a prelude to when things really begin. I mean, your family, you get that feeling from everybody, you know. When you're married, that's sort of when things start. And I would think that it would be difficult to be either single and never married, or even if you've gotten divorced or if your spouse has died, it's like, it's all over now. You're alone. I mean, that was when things were really happening, was when you were married. It'd be hard just to say, I'm happy single. Like, if I ever say something like, well, I'm not going to get married, people say, oh, of course you are. And it's like, you're cutting yourself down if you're saying you're never going to get married. And it's a compliment to say, of course you are. But, you know, all the values seem to go the other way.
The unclaimed jewel, absolutely. About 7-8 years ago, in a thing like right here in this room, we got talking about this, a woman about 50. She said she had kidded herself all the time. She was about 50 now, thinking it wasn't her fault, but she was, somebody had told her she was an unclaimed jewel. The only trouble was that the right guy out there hadn't found her yet.
Oh, yeah.
And so she could put the blame on somebody else, and suddenly she said at 50, it was a lie, you know? And, but this is the unclaimed jewel idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's pervasive. I think that's something that I continue to struggle with. You come to view yourself at a point, I've been on my own, gone through grad school for 4 years and have had a teaching job for two full-time. And I still struggle with the notion that when does life begin, which I hear what you're saying, and yet I think, oh, that's malarkey. I'm having a wonderful time with my friends. And what I'm hearing also from my friends who are married is that it's not such a nifty institution. And begin to treasure my own experience in my apartment alone, you know, ordering my own time, doing what I darn well please, and loving that to the hilt. But there are still these tapes, as you say, which you know, when does it happen? When does it begin? And sometimes those play at downtime. Sometimes they are just so pervasive. Boom, it's right there. It's as if you've got perhaps liberated ideas. I don't think it's even liberated ideas. I think it's just, freedom's the same word, isn't it? A sense of freedom that singleness can have so that you don't tie yourself down to this. And I think for women, we adapt to what the male wants to do this, that, and the other thing, and readjust our schedule to, you know, kind of become dependent in the relationship. Those notions are so pervasive that it's almost hard for me to take the ideas here. I can see them sometimes, but they're not arising out of the gut. They're not natural yet. I haven't hit your 35 point of hold and going boom, even though many of the experiences say, this is great.
I think what both of them are saying is precisely the persuasive culture that we live in, which says they're really down deep, you know there's something wrong with you. That you really are not a whole person. And I think it's the parents, it's the whole aunts and uncles routine, and it's the whole feeling that that 90% is right, because that 90% has to be right, even in the divorce or in the death, and it was not a good situation, because that's 9 out of 10 of us have bought the tapes, then those that do not really become outside the mainstream, because if we become the mainstream, then the whole fear of, well, I didn't want to do it and I did, or why didn't I have that freedom? The choice that then arises gets to be a very serious sort of happening, particularly if we can't find biblical. Now, if we have some biblical evidence that you must get married, somehow that frees the married, even outside of Christianity, somehow within our society. But that within the society, that concept of marriage and preparation, we do that to high school kids, by the way. We do it to college kids, too. I want it stopped for everything. That 9 through 12 year old kid is living. And there's some things he or she needs to go on. But I find that in particularly teaching college, that they're in such a state of preparation for something that they're missing the moment. And that the peaks are just sort of pits almost, because that goal, that competition is there. And marriage just looms so large in our Western society that it's really hard. And I think you almost have to have some kind of traumatic experience to free you, unless you happen to be raised in a family in which there are some singles someplace that are successful singles. I don't believe, my niece hears the tapes, but she hears my tape and my sister's tape over here, and she's met a lot with a lot of my single friends, has lived with me for several months, and has therefore whipped through, finished her PhD, and I hope is going to live now. She too has been in the limbo, not over marriage, but over the education, which we also do in the whole sort of tape kind of world. You were sort of shaking your head. No, in front.
Yeah. I buy that completely, having gone through a divorce several years ago, that I bought into marriage and the family and didn't find that it worked for me, and have only recently discovered that that I am a person and I'm much happier being my own person. I mean, I recognize that I can take care of myself and living for what I'm doing right now instead of the future, always looking for that happiness over the hill that comes with marriage. And, you know, it's here right now. I agree completely. I guess I rewound my tapes too.
And the cost, I think, of you rewinding your tapes is a great cost. And that we talked last time of how the church doesn't help us in rewinding the tapes at all. And that if we can find some way of using the tapes, not to prevent marriage, but rather to give a view of marriage, which is two independent people who have found a love relationship. And I think that's true out of marriage too, that love relationships can occur and do occur in which both people are better for the experience. And as I see it, that's part of whatever love is. And I don't have to make any value judgments beyond what it's doing for not only those people, but that a love relationship brings a glory to all kinds of things. And for some, that's very intimate love, including sexual, and for others, it is not. For those of us that it is not, however, there just has to be, I think, a larger array of friends and acquaintances because of that sort of exclusiveness that is a part of partly a longing for Christ, I think, but partly a longing for understanding, and that we are important. I think his discussion earlier today about that each one must be important. And when we get at 21, we've got the tapes that say, really to be important, I've got to be married, forces us then into some marriages that were not good. Not that wouldn't have 10 years later been a great marriage, and that you would have met someone much later. And we're certainly finding by statistics that later marriages are more successful. Later relationships, all human relationships succeed better, which deals, I suppose, with our maturity.
Can you explain a little bit more what you mean by your exclusiveness term?
Yeah, I think an exclusive relationship is a sexual relationship with a commitment, that you have made a commitment, whether in marriage or out of marriage, for one individual, and that that's your primary relationship, and that you will return to that relationship and promise to do that, and that you will renew one another, and all the things that marriage does. I think marriage is an exclusive relationship, but I think there are exclusive relationships for that 3% of our population outside of marriage that has exactly the marriage relationship. The homosexuals, I think, are those man and woman living together that have made both a sexual and a total commitment to one another. I think there's some sexual relationships that are not exclusive relationships. So it's not just the sexual that makes it exclusive, but that it's a primary relationship. It's a little bit like the concept in open marriage, in which the divorce occurred, 2 years later after the book Open Marriage. But, and I think what that does is that you always have a harbor, and that one of the pits of singleness is that your harbor is not in one other person. But what you, as I see it, my harbor was in my family. My mother died last year, and the harbor gets smaller. But because probably my sister and I are both single, there is another harbor, and there's my brother's family. But that in fact, for me as a single, that really isn't enough. And that the death of my mother really made me realize that my harbor was almost a non-sexual exclusiveness harbor in sharing my life with me. And because of my working conditions, I could share it a lot. And because of my financial situation, that unlike a lot of single people, I could really afford to be with those I loved. I also can afford to call those I love. Well, I can't afford it, I do it. And so how I live as a single is different than say how any other two people who are not married live. Then I think there's also soul friends who live together non-sexually, who don't have a life commitment but have a love relationship in that sort of temporary way, like a niece, like a friend that comes in for 6 months. But that that's not your sort of final harbor, is sort of what I and I think it's different. I think that therefore some of how I live professionally is also different because I don't deal in an exclusive relationship. My profession is probably 60 to 70% of my life, 60% of my life. And I'm free to do that by not having invested my energy in one person, no matter in what sort of situation. I think that my profession has a greater chance. My religion could have a greater chance, but the flux of the church that I belong to probably doesn't make me commit myself to that. But I do think my freedoms are greater for doing that and sharing even in the church. I think the church has been a negative in my single life. And I think we talked about that last week and some of those experiences. So that's sort of what I we're talking about in it. What other peaks or pits that we might want to share that sort of helps in our understanding of a community or a lifestyle that deals in singles?
I haven't found it particularly easy to have relationships with my married friends, whether they be male or female, because it seems like there's almost a jealousy on either end of being too close to the man and the wife gets jealous, or even being too close to the woman in the sense and the man can get jealous about that because there's an affinity that I think that sometimes women can have with women that a man can't share with his own wife, or is just on a different level. And that's something that's bothered me quite a bit. And then even with single people, with single men, it's been really hard for me to just have a healthy kind of platonic relationship, you know, without overtones. Especially, I think when a lot of some of the single men that I know are as old as I am or whatever, and they have their own feelings about probably wanting to be married and all that, but it's just been an area that's been difficult. And the exclusiveness, I think I miss that a lot and as a single person.
Others want to comment on that one? I think that's an important issue for singles on some clues or some helps on how does one deal with that, keeping the couple as friends or keeping a male-female relationship or even a female one that permits that openness. Any?
My friends are mostly married friends, and I'm single. And I find in one relationship that the husband and I are friends, so to speak, but we do very little together as husband, wife, and myself. The other friend, husband and wife, and I do everything together. And the husband is very happy for my friendship with the wife, and I think in the other case it is too, but I then will make plans to do things with the total three of us in the one situation, and in the other situation, I generally do things only with the female. Now, in both situations, if I ever wanted to do anything with either of the men individually, probably one that the three of us do things together, I would feel more free to go out and do things than I would with the one where the woman and I do. But I think, again, this exclusiveness that Joanne was talking about, it really does free you to have, and I think in terms of church ministry, it frees you to minister to an awful lot of people because you have the energy and the time, because you aren't spending all your energies on developing one relationship. You can have many relationships. But the other situation, of course, I'm at my age, the men don't look at me for any other reason than conversations.
I beg your pardon. Your age is practically my age.
I think you have to know the male and the female in the married relationship and what's going to be meaningful to you. And and walk away if there is a problem with the one of the opposite sex, and that's just a sacrifice you have to make for a relationship.
Unless the individual in the relationship chooses some other option.
Yeah, then you have to, actually you have to leave it up to the friend.
Yeah.
In terms of that, if the friend values the relationship enough, to have to spend time in terms of giving up some of their exclusiveness mm-hmm. too.
I was going to say something about, this is something I've mostly noticed in high school and college, but women, when they get involved in a relationship, you know, in a romantic relationship with a guy, a lot of times they just don't keep up with their other relationships. I mean, this is the important one, so I think a lot of times that the exclusive one, I mean, just has priority, kind of, and the other ones are sort of thrown aside a lot of times, especially I suppose when you're really enthusiastic when you first get involved with somebody, that you just sort of let everybody else go, and then always bother me, and mm-hmm. desert me. Or they're together, you know, and you can't just walk up to them type of things. They're in their own room.
I think that's part of romantic love and a part of getting to know one another and enabling to have an exclusive mm-hmm. relationship. And I think what I have found is that it's pretty painful for me because I too have had, and particularly because I've had longer term yeah. Relationships. And what I have found is about 6 months to a year of letting them deal in that exclusive relationship. And then it's my responsibility, as I see it, to make overtures to see what is going to happen. I think it's the pits insofar as one does get hurt. By some who never return.
Yeah.
But it's worth it to me for the friendship and the relationship that I had at that time for that length of time. And I find that as people get married, I also find that as I have homosexual friends who have separated, and then I am a friend of theirs in a very soul kind of friendship way, and very close, and then they find another mate. And with a homosexual relationship, because it is so vulnerable within our society, I think it's it doesn't have both the church in most cases, and it doesn't have a license that says we're exclusive and that we're going to succeed. And so there has to be backing off and backpedaling for a time. But I've really never had a really close friend that I lost for life in either marriage or in a male-female living relationship, except for that time that I think is essential for getting to know one another. And maybe because I have the advantage of years of watching the pattern, it hurts me less and I pursue more in the relationship. In it. But I think it definitely does happen, and I think it absolutely happens in that case, and you have to decide, sometimes you have to decide and sometimes they have to decide the importance of it. When I was younger, I used to use as my barometer for male-female relationships, I played a lot of mixed doubles in tennis, and if the wife didn't even know me, and we were mixed doubles for a year, and when she does, there's a catty remark. That's the end. But if she knows of it and enjoys it. And I think what it all goes back to is the fear and the threat that we as insecure human beings have. That's sort of part of our luggage that everybody has. I don't know any so secure human being that they are absolutely certain forever and ever that person's going to like and associate and want. And that's one of the reasons for marriage. In a sense, is that binding that you can have that relationship. But I think it happens there. It also happens that it may be more difficult to become friends with couples. And we talked last time in the church of the difficulties of some of the problems of relationships. And the difficulty, particularly of widows, the men seem to be having a wee of a time afterwards in terms of that people keep inviting them, but that the female whose husband dies simply is not invited as long as often.
Do some of you have any comments on your own experiences in dealing probably with death or divorce after a much longer period where you've had a couple friends? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I'll share a little bit. It's so true that I feel that it is a couple's world, and my husband did die 4 years ago. And the majority, my two closest friends are still my two closest friends, but the majority of our friends never invite me. And I'm totally out of their life, so it's been a lonely life for me. I spend a lot of time at work, and I spend my time helping others, and this is my biggest part, is also being fed.
I think the aloneness, and as I see it, that's one of my roles as a single, because I know what that world is like out there, and there are some pits in it, and it is a couple's world. We go to the restaurants in 2, 4, 6, and 8s, and we're invited to homes in 2, 4, 6, and 8s, and the Noah's Ark syndrome is a part of the society unless we break it up, and that in both deaths of people around my age, and also the whole loneliness experience of children going off to college, even in a married couple, I think that there isn't anybody in this room that's single that hasn't experienced an aloneness or loneliness as great as any in a death situation, which I think is probably the greatest grief. Although I think the divorced person probably has more tapes that interferes. But that the grief situation in a divorce, in separation of any kind, is something that perhaps singles understand. And it sort of my last question that we're going to have time for is, how does one deal with loneliness, given the fact that we live in the couple's world, and some of us, including me, want to be able to say, I am single, I am strong, I selected this life. But the fact is, a loneliness creeps in, and there seems to be a bigger fear of it. It creeps in marriage, as I understand it, too. But there still is the human being around. I want to give some helps or comments on the loneliness.
My loneliness time is meal time. It's a pitch to fix a meal somewhere. And you can't go out to dinner every night with your friends. And that's one thing I'm still grappling with, is that time. I came from a big family, and I've chosen to be single right now. And how is it with that? I'm still grappling with that.
But it's interesting that the food producers have found that there is a singles market out there. And there are, you know, all the new things, and you can get really good food for singles, and that makes all the kinds of difference. You don't have leftovers, and you don't have to worry about it. Am I preparing too much? Because you can buy, you know, I've got a few things I really like, the Armour's Glide Classics and those things. And that, you know, I know the loneliness, and I like to share and talk at mealtime, it's great, but it's just a matter of wasting food or preparing too much or blowing it, because I was totally all 10 thumbs when I was the first time in the kitchen. And that's been a big help for me.
I think as a member of the affluent society, the microwave
yes.
has been terribly helpful to me. It also has helped in my dietary life
yes.
because I don't come home and eat. But I think I probably have someone in for eating with me. And what I have done is make sure that it's not a big fanfare.
Right.
So that I have to have a fanfare every time I eat with someone. And I have done it with people in my apartment. At first, when I bought a condo, I didn't want to have to bother with all the people surrounding me. And so I sort of kept in my own place and invited my own friends. And as I have moved out, I haven't found one uninteresting person in my condo group. And by having just soup and salad, which is about the best I can do, a few other sorts of microwave, I have found that I eat with them and I eat better meals by doing that. The other thing is spending a lot of time talking to myself about 3 years ago about how important I was, and that therefore I deserve to fix myself a meal. for a real meal as opposed to junk food. And I think some of that helps. But I definitely think a round table was made for people, and some of it is just being able to invite people. I now have some single men that that are not really looking for a wife either, and I think some of that helps, and divorced people and some children occasionally help. And Sunday is the pit day, I think, when one doesn't have any friends. And Ma Bell knows all about that because at 5 o'clock she stops letting you have cheap rates. And I think there was something in that. And I do a lot of long-distance telephoning. I have a large network, and I think I use emotional networks in eating. And it will be often at dinner time that it occurs.
One interesting thing, it takes commitment, but there are four people in Northfield. They're all singles, and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, one of the four prepares a meal that night and does everything, and then they're free the other three nights, and then they go to each other's home, and they're like a family. And then the idea is that you're perfectly free to leave, let's say, at 7 o'clock, and there's no eyebrows raised or anything else. But that's clearly understood. Then you have three nights in the week that you don't, that you're completely on your own, and that works, these people. But it does take a real commitment to them. And then they have to worry about if somebody's spending too much and that sort of thing, but those are procedural things. But this one works.
It's talking about mealtime, too. Sometimes when you don't want to, you stay home and fix your own, to go out by yourself. That is really a trip sometimes, especially being a single woman and the lack of attention that you get being a single woman. You know, people, the waitress will go to the family next to you and ask three times during the course of your meal if they're doing fine and never spoke to you once.
And you know, that's not just the family. As you know, meeting it's a man and woman and children family. It's not just a woman with children. I get asked, is your husband joining you? You know, Ty, before they will serve me or feed me. And it's a man and woman family.
That reminds me of a secretary who was recently divorced at where I work. And I've been working on her continuously about people and friends and so on. And one day she came to the office absolutely elated. And she had planned it, and I didn't realize she had planned it for three nights, and the fourth night she went out to dinner all by herself at a really quite nice restaurant. Fortunately, she had a good experience. I had wished that I had known before in case it wasn't going to be a nice experience. But I think more and more in the larger cities, they are more used to singles. But it is a trip. I think it is not with males quite as much because there are more female waitresses. And you're a businessman, obviously, as you're sitting here eating. And so you have certain rights. Your inside feelings are probably the same. But I think it's an important move for your singleness concept to be able to do that, to be able to do anything that you want to do that would be a part of married life. The same as I think that's important in all spheres of life that you want to experience. And that's sort of my final plea is that singlehood, as I live it and see it, has some pits. But that the peaks that I find and the excitement and adventure and the travel and the people that I meet and some of the people that I help and the people that can help me by it and the broadening of experiences that I think I give to others and the experience and exposure that is possible as a single, that were I given the freedom to change my life, I simply wouldn't change it.
What about kids?
Oh, so he can close it. I at one time thought I would like children, and I am financially able to adopt them. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, unknown probably to my sister, I had almost an opportunity for a black boy of 2 and 4 when I was about 40, not quite 40. And I don't know if I would have gone forward with it. But women cannot adopt boys in Washington, D.C. I would have had to adopt a girl. And at that point, I was not interested in adopting a girl. I would have been interested in a boy. And as I see it, that adoption, I think, is a perfectly legitimate option, and I have some friends that have adopted children. The problem I see with one's own is the same problem just because I think that family size and that there are enough needful children in the world that I don't really think that bringing them up singly is necessarily as good as having a family or a community life, but that certainly for adoption, it's all that kids are a lot better off with outside of a foster home and into a home. Just as I often believe a divorced family, the children are better off than pretending. That children are, I have seen children who see parents pretend. So I think it's a greater and greater possibility. I thought I wanted some until I was around a lot of them for a long time. And last week, I knew for sure.
Life begins when the children leave home and the dog dies.
Okay, I think it is about the closing. I think mostly I'm just interested in discussing it and getting some ideas.
Thank you. My mother's is going to begin.